Okay.
All right. What's going on, guys? Welcome back to another episode of Textual Talk. Man, it's episode whatever. I think it's like 28, 29. I'm going to get it right in the title. But we got a special guest today, man. We got KD, a.k.a. if you follow her on YouTube or IG Glam Techie. She's here to vibe out with us today. Y'all already know what to do on the channel. Make sure you hit the subscribe button, like it, share for the YouTube algorithm. Follow my podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, you name it. But, you know, not to hold y'all long and talk too long. Let's get to it. All right, so let's give our guest a round of applause real quick for coming up for us today. So, Miss KD, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and where you're from and kind of what you currently do now?
Yeah, so I'm originally from Clear Lake, Texas. It's like 30, 40 minutes outside of Houston. I currently reside in San Antonio. This is where I work. At first, I didn't always want to be in tech. I actually wanted to be in fashion. So I actually wanted to be a stylist for like celebrity, black celebrities in LA, had it all figured out. And then I started off as like unpaid help desk for my family, helping with cell phones and all of that stuff, computers, installing software. That kind of intrigued me about like technology and stuff. And so now I work as a systems engineer. I used to be in software development, but now I moved into systems.
Nice, nice. So what's funny is, you're still actually designing stuff in a sense, even though it's not, I don't know. But then again, with the metaverse and this NFT stuff, you still can get your designer on with, you know, the skill sets that you have. So I wouldn't say give up hope on that, because now you can take it to the metaverse.
Right. You caught it, though. You see that with my Instagram, too.
Yeah, definitely. I see the passion for fashion. Wasn't that the Bratz commercial back in the day? I think Bratz. They said that on
the
there.
Brat dolls. Oh, uh-huh. God. That goes way back.
See, Siri talking to me. I ain't say nothing to her.
Oh, man. Siri be on that. I got to be careful, too. Mine might be listening, too.
So you said pretty much we're going to just say you're from Houston, even though you said you're outside of Houston.
Oh, okay.
That's what people tend to do when they stay by a bigger city and say, I'm from Houston. Because I reside like in Dallas now, but we know everybody doesn't stay in Dallas. So let's talk about, I know you said you were like kind of like the unpaid help desk of your family. What really made you want to really try to pursue this tech thing? Like, what made you really want to do that?
It really interests me. And then also too, I'm not even going to lie. Let's keep it like a complete 100 is that the money. So at first, when I was looking at the starting salaries for, fashion stylists, I think the average salary at that time, and that was back in like 2010, 2011, it was in the 40,000, even lower. And that's not even a senior position. So I was like, okay, my parents might have a point about the whole fashion thing. And so I started looking, I think it was like what intrigued me about programming and how systems work and stuff was like doing more of the computer stuff than more helping them with my cell phones and stuff like that. I was kind of bored with that, but setting up like networks and routers and stuff at my parents and my grandmother's house, that really intrigued me. It's like, okay, let me see what this tech is about. What can I really do? Like, what would I have to study to work in this space? And that kind of started me on the path. And then I went into, I went out of state for college. So I did not go to school in Texas. I actually went to Arizona State, go Sun Devils. I did that on purpose because I wanted to get out of Texas. Everybody I knew was staying in Texas. And so I studied information systems and computer science. And how I just kind of pivoted and moved into that path.
Nice. Well, I've never been to Arizona, and I really just thought about something childish because I don't know. I'm saying I don't know. I don't ask people their ages, but I typically know people's ages based on the jokes I make because I thought about, sorry, I lied to you, Martin. I just didn't want to go to Arizona. So, I'm in my 30s. Okay. I couldn't tell, so that's a good thing. I'll be 30. Dang, it's February, so I'll be 30 next month.
Oh my God. You only like 3 years younger than me.
Yeah, you know, they say age ain't nothing but a number. I feel like I'm like 40. But, quick question. So I did, my undergrad was in information systems, and I have mixed feelings about it. I think it was cool because it introduced me to different things, but what the bad part is that it didn't guide me to a specific thing or it really helped me figure out what I want to do. And that was kind of something I touched on, I think in one of my last episodes I did. I want to say Mary and I talked about this, the reason why boot camps are becoming popular is because the curriculums are too vague now. And they're not showing you how to get a job, so you like it's kind of like you're wasting time. And I was talking about how I recently talked to the head of my old curriculum in undergrad, and the curriculum is the same. What was your experience with your curriculums in college?
My experience was very similar. That was one of the biggest complaints from the students, including myself, was that there was no concentration. There was no specialty. It was just like, here's databases. This is what object-oriented programming is. This is what a systems analyst does. There was no focus like cyber networking, front end. It was none of that. It was very general. So it's very hard to, especially in school, it's like, okay, well, what do I get me a job in if I don't know what I could specialize or what I could actually do with the degree? And so I didn't know until I got into industry that there was like specialties that you could go into. So I kind of had to stumble a little bit. And I think that because I wasn't as well informed in undergrad, you know, that's why I took on a lot of underpaid, sometimes no paid internships just to get experience, because I didn't know what exactly. I know I wanted to work in tech, but I just kind of stumbled into development and stuff like that. But it didn't have a concentration, which was very frustrating.
Yeah, definitely. And I think one of the things that could do to combat that is a lot of the professors, some of them have worked in the industry. So I think it'd be best if they let them teach classes that be based on what a person would do in that industry. The only really good class I liked that probably swayed me into cybersecurity was I did a forensics class, I think close to my senior year. And that was pretty cool. I was like, And from forensics, I went to security plus. And then I knew I wanted to get in security, but I didn't know how to all those years ago. Okay. And stumbled, did help desk and not for a while. Then finally found my way. But, you know, it's people that never find their way when they come out of school. And I see why they blame school, because you spent a lot of time, money, them people trying to fail you. They didn't tell me, like, for example, school didn't teach me about certifications. I had to find out about certifications on my own. That's one of the major things I actually asked the curriculum guy. I said, hey, do y'all get certs with these curriculum? He was like, what? I was like,
and he was a professor. Are you what?
I was like, what incentivizes him? And you know, I was like, only thing they changed was instead of teaching the Visual Basic, they was teaching Python. And I was like, like, man, that's why
they didn't teach Python in my CIS program, so you did.
And what's crazy, what actually had me look into this was the fact that I'm the oldest of four. All my younger siblings are two in high school. One is about to graduate this year. One is a junior. And then my baby sister is in eighth grade. My brother under me was thinking about going to my undergrad and probably majoring in what I did, which I don't know why. If you're watching this right now, make sure you're still with us. Hit that thumbs up button. Hit the subscribe button. But this is a PSA for the parents, guardians, whoever. Mm-hmm. At 18, most of the time, your kid don't know what they don't know. Research the curriculum with them. Ask people. Look for prime example parents, even if you don't have people a LinkedIn. Y'all both make a LinkedIn. Go find people with whatever degree you had, or look up the roles and see if you message them and see if they'd be willing to, you know, talk to you a little bit about what they actually should focus on, where they should go. Because what's happening is people not reviewing the curriculum, and so they don't know anything. And therefore, you are wasting money. You know, I advised him, I said, hey, go to the community college. We have a community college in Bossier City that will give you some certs for the classes you take. And then you can transfer anywhere you want to go. I say, or, well, I said, you want to go to school and have fun? Or do you want to get a job and make money? I said, because you can do WGU, get your little internship. And you can, I mean, it's what you want to make it. But when you don't know anybody like that, granted, since I was first gen, I'm able to help out and get way better perspective than, dang it, shoot, that was 12 years ago for me, getting ready to go on to school. And the crazy thing is how you was talking about
2012. So,
right. And how you were talking about wanting to be in fashion. I just go back to me thinking about being an architect. And I started looking at like how they start off with. And I was like, for all the crap they got to do in college, they don't start paying them enough. They don't pay them enough in the beginning. So,
architect, you got to take you got to get all these approvals and go through all these board reviews. Then you have to have a licensed architect or somebody to like hours or something like that. You have to have enough hours.
Right. Those two bees are sleeping there. So I wasn't with that. I was all about, listen, hey, y'all might think this bad advice unless you're trying to get an internship, but C's get degrees.
They sure do.
From what I also know and experience, straight A's teach me nothing about a person, because I know for a fact it's people who have the same test that's been in rotation for years and you just memorize them and pass everything. So it don't mean nothing.
That is so true.
We didn't got all the way off topic, but that's just some of my gripes. And I might do one of my videos. One of my videos I plan to do is like, think about this before going to school, or going to college. And that's the main reason. Is if you're going to go to certain schools, I get it. If you're going to pony up the money up, make sure you get your return on investment. You know, don't go just, a lot of people went just to go, but you don't have to do that no more. It's way more resources. YouTube University is here. You got all these different career coaches. Now they're representation people that look like us that they can actually just reach out to, which, you know, you couldn't find that on YouTube 10 plus years ago.
You could not. It was only like two black girls I knew, which is Bites of Brie and Maya. So it's grown.
You had to. Like, I didn't see really people like me doing it until like I started working with my boss at the College of Business. You know, because I mean, honestly, ain't too many people talk about like IT tech at high school. I mean, it wasn't really mentioned. You know, they mostly talk about the same old stuff, nursing, doctor, lawyer,
business administration.
Right. Agreed. And to be truthful, I think business administration, I don't say it's useless, but I think it's much harder because it's too vague. You don't specialize in anything. You could be a manager.
You notice though, when people that do a business administration, like if they're really strategic, they'll always have something go with it, like marketing, like in business administration and finance, business administration and marketing, business administration and accounting, like because it doesn't have a concentration.
Definitely. And honestly, that's how CIS should be. Computer information systems with, you know, specialized in networking, database, cybersecurity, web design, UX, programming. Like that's what it should be like. That way, when they see the degree, okay, we know exactly what you worked on. One of the things I do want to do one day is, because I wanted to work with him on it, but at the same time, I seem like they had their mind made up. I want to find a university that'll be progressive, that'll, you know, take my insight seriously and also pay me for it, because I'm not helping y'all for free. But
we got to get paid, right?
Because they definitely.
You mean you want to do like curriculum design?
I wouldn't mind. Because I mean, it's similar to. Like free game is like kind of like when people come to me who didn't go to college, right? And they're looking for a cheap alternative. So I say, hey, use one of these e-learning platforms like Cyberary, for example, has a SOC analyst path. And I take certain things people did in that path and I put them down as like related coursework. So it's the same things that people could actually teach classes on, just like they do like with WGU, and they like structure them to certs. They could do the same thing. And that'll keep people coming into school. If not, I don't know what they're going to do. You can't justify people just going to go unless they just want to be away. Once they get old, eventually, because they ain't canceling the loans. And it's only so long you can do income-based repayment. And you don't want to. Everybody don't want to be like work for like, you know, the state or anything like that. So
No, I interned for the state and I knew very quickly in my 6 months that that is not something I wanted to do, be at the state for a full-time job. Absolutely not, because it's very unstable. You know, if they make budget cuts or depending on who in office, you know, you might be up out of a job.
Got it. Sorry. I've seen something on my phone. Good. But anyway, now that's settled. So we've been talking about kind of like how it was for you in college. Let's get into, so how long have you actually been doing tech? You know, how long has that altogether been going on for you? Yeah.
So nine years. It'll be 10 in August 12th of this year. When I graduated out of college, I had like 40 plus job rejections. I applied everywhere. And to be honest, when I first graduated out of college, I actually thought, okay, maybe I'll work as a systems analyst. You know, I did minor in computer science, but the same thing with computer science, there was no concentration. So I didn't know. I knew I had a technical degree, but I didn't really know what all I could do with it. So my goal was to try to do internships in different spaces. So finally, after like overcoming all the job rejections, I got me a job as a software developer, but working in back end. So I did that for 4 years. I worked with like shell scripting. I did ETL, like data stage. I did a lot of database stuff, SQL, business objects reporting, that sorts of thing. And then
so you was getting in there then.
So at first they played me though, because in undergrad, you know, I had taken classes. My programming was in like .NET and Java. So I thought, okay, they hired me on. I'm gonna be a Java developer, I guess, you know. And they were like, nah, we don't have any slots for Java developers. We're about to put you on this distributed team. And they're like, do you know Linux? I'm like, no. They're like, perfect. We're gonna put you on this team. So I had to kind of like, they kind of like threw me in the deep and I had to pick up really, really quickly. And then as much as I like the development side, there's like politics and business to it. And I'm kind of got tired of my work being determined by business people that don't know what they want. They think they know what they want, but they really don't. They'll come to me and be like, I want A, B, and C, but you really don't. You want A through G. And then you spend all this hard work and hours and overtime trying to give them what they want and they keep changing stuff. And so I kind of got sick of that. And I was like, okay, So I had a conversation with my manager and it's like, hey, I kind of would like to expand my career and try a different technical role. And so that's how I kind of networked around the company, to be honest. She was not really rushing. She heard me, but she didn't really hear me. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna have to do me. So I started networking, talking to other people in systems, and I made a connection and he connected me with his manager. Then I told my manager and then I interviewed. And then, so that's where I've been for the past 5 years in systems. So, and systems is crazy because people think like systems people don't code. We may not code as much as like a software developer, but we definitely do. It's definitely the line between like systems administration, but also like systems programming. So like, you know, keeping track of servers and capacity, making sure that stuff that runs on the servers is not consuming all of our resources for the whole organization. We kind of work with developers a lot. You know, I'm sure you work in tech as well, like with incidents, you know, we being on outage calls all the time because somebody job ran too long or somebody was running something they shouldn't have. And, you know, those sorts of things.
Yeah. That reminds me when I worked at the NOC, we had pretty much dashboards and all these different alarms when everything would like get to a certain level, like, I forgot when it fired, probably like 80-90%. And you had to figure out like, why is it, you know, CPU going up that threshold and it's an outage. And then we were in the payment card industry. So if it was an outage or something wasn't working, I mean, companies was losing money. So it became a big deal. And I used to leverage that when I didn't necessarily have cybersecurity experience per se, but I did. I just didn't know I didn't. But I used to leverage that when I would be in interviews. I was like, well, I do know incident response. I mean, I do it in a different way, But I definitely understand, like, documenting and stating the problem and trying to get the root cause. So it definitely used to be my job as a NOC was pretty fun and boring, meaning, you know, if you're not an ambitious person, you just want to collect the check, you could definitely do it. I mean, I used to work, Thursday through Sunday. And hang on a second. My fault. I'm like, no, you know, you can hear everybody in the background. I'm like, she know I'm recording. Okay. Yeah, so if you're an unambitious person, you could definitely do it. I used to go up there, like I used to work Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Saturday, Sunday, most of the time I was sleeping the whole day. Going to the Galleria, going to get food, inviting people up there to keep me company. They ain't supposed to be up there. For real. Like it's amazing I never got caught doing that. You know what I'm saying? Let me give myself a snake sound for that. Like
it's true, though.
I had to because, I mean, I was pissed off. I was like, fam. Because at that time, their contract stated with the people that they were monitoring transactions for that somebody would always be present in the NOC. And I'm like, fam, I could do this from home. Why am I waking up extra early to be at work for 7 o'clock on a Saturday to do nothing the whole day unless something fires? This doesn't even make sense. Like, I used to get pissed off. Like, that's what made me – that's how I ended up going to grad school. I was so bored, so I need something to do at work.
I could relate because I work for a financial services company. So I keep Glam Techie, my business, GT Digital, separate from my workspace. But they do have, they used to have, and I'm not a developer per se anymore, but they had a rotation program where you did have to sit in the, they call it an availability center. And that's where you had to monitor jobs, batch. If there were any incidents, you had to hop on a call and speak to them. It was like a 6-month mandatory rotation that they put all the new people in because they were like, you know, before you touch our code, we want to make sure that like you understand how an outage works, how to communicate, how to send emails, how to get the right parties involved and all of that stuff. And much respect because we had to do the early shifts. It was like 6:30 to 2. I was like, man, the devil is a lie because. You know, I'm used to coming in at like 9, 8:45.
Hey, bro, come 6:30. On, now, dog.
Oof.
Come on, man.
Right. So, I mean, I can completely relate. And they still have that availability center where people, they have set teams that do just that. And they are very good at that. So I can completely understand. Because I was in there for 6 months and I was like, oh, man. Oof.
Right. Funny thing is, like, everything is flowing to me now. Like, another way I used to set myself in these interviews is, like, they would talk about, I was 24/7. I was like, listen, over 2 years, I worked every imaginable schedule you could think of. Because when I did help desk, I worked 5 a.m. to 2 p.m., 6 to 3. I worked the other way around, coming in at 6 p.m. to 5 in the morning. I worked 11 to 10 p.m. and then did 5 hours of overtime. Like, 12 to 11. Like I used to work like so many different shifts. Like that's why for years, it took years for my sleep schedule for me to actually be able to sleep at night. Cause my body was just changing so much. One moment you'd be going to sleep in the morning. Next night you're going to sleep at night. It didn't really know. And I used to sleep at work. Like we leave the phone on for real. You don't get that many calls. Nah. We, well, before they locked the thing down, shoot, I used to get DVDs and shoot, I go to game machines, buy some DVDs.
I have my tablet in there. I have my little monitors. I have my little tablet. I'll be watching stuff.
Well,
looking at the dashboard.
It used to be much funner until the people on the other side started blocking like the stuff we could do on the network. So we couldn't do that. So I had a laptop at the time. I put an emulator on it. So I used to just be playing the emulator games at work, to pass time and, I go to sleep. You know, the only way you get a call, you leave it on speaker and then it make a noise. You do the call. And most of the time it was pretty fast. And so that used to be easy money, but it did get bored old quick. But
you can.
So you're at the same company that you started with?
I am.
Interesting because, you know, most people subscribe, and I subscribe to it to a sense, but I say only do it if it makes sense for you. Most people subscribe to job hopping, far as, you know, because they want to get money. But I know my last position, I stayed there. That was like probably the longest company I've been at, like 3 years and some change. It's only because they let me have room to grow like every couple of months or every year. So I didn't really have a reason. I wasn't necessarily just chasing money because I knew the money was going to come. I was doing different opportunities because it, you know, got me to where I'm at now. So, but like I do say, if people's objective is to get paid, you can definitely jump around, but you sometimes that might not benefit you in the long run if you're not really going somewhere and actually proving like stuff you implemented and bringing value there so you can actually show people when you interview. So, but what's your take on that?
Reason for it. Yeah, my take is, you know, number one, you have to do what's best for you. And for me, I really wanted to build technical depth in each area. So that's why I stayed. And also the benefits and the pay were really good at this particular company. And their style or their culture is you don't necessarily have to change companies. You can just change jobs in a completely different technical domain without having to leave the company. And you don't necessarily have to have a master's degree either to work in another technical domain. So that to me was attractive. And I like the stability. Now that I'm kind of more seasoned in my career, I would like to, I am looking at possibly maybe changing companies or changing roles because my interest has changed slightly and I would like to do different projects. But again, it comes back to the style of the person. And if you feel like you need to move, to make moves, to get the different roles and experiences that you need to do, absolutely do it. And you want to get more coin, absolutely, you know, get them checks. But if it makes sense for you to stay a little bit longer and learn what you need to learn to do that, absolutely. So it really depends on the person. That was my style, but it really depends on the person. There's not a wrong or right way to do it.
Nice. So what we'll do now, you kind of talked about system engineering. We'll say now, if somebody says they wanted to be a system engineer from like step one, including what they need to do and skills to learn, like what would they need to do in order to be a systems engineer?
I would say problem solving, fundamental problem solving. I would tell them exactly how my mentor, my original mentor told me, because I thought I had to have all this knowledge about operating systems. I thought I had to know every scripting language, and it was so fundamental. And I looked at him like he was dumb because I was so dumbfounded by how simple his answer was. If you really want to be a systems engineer or in the system space, you really just have to have really good communication skills. Like, you got to be able to articulate problems, be like, hey, we got this, the capacity on this server is over 90%. You have to be able to articulate problems clearly because you're going to be talking to different audiences and different teams. So you might be working with like database people. You might be working with network people. Great communication and great troubleshooting. It's like super fundamental. Like, I know that sounds super basic and some people are like, really, that's it? But to honestly, that's with every role in tech. Like, it don't matter if you work in systems or cyber, but be able to problem solve and look at an issue and break it down and or get at least a good idea of what the issue is, and then learning how to Google that issue. That is like, you'd be so surprised, because when I was in college, that was frowned upon. You know, looking at other people's code, Googling stuff. Like, that was frowned upon. It's like, oh, you a copycat. You're not going to be a successful developer, or you're not going to be successful in tech. When I got in industry, that was the devil is a lie, because that's how I learned. And then I went on Stack Overflow. I talked to my peers. So it's really, if you really want to be in systems, have a great attitude, great communication, great troubleshooting skills, and then be willing to have really great soft skills. We don't talk about soft skills. You really have to be great with like working with different types of people. Everybody focuses on so much on like the technical stuff. I think soft skills are just as important. How to talk to people, like what not to put in an email, how to not throw somebody under the bus when you write something, how to cover yourself and cover your butt to say, hey, I did my due diligence. I looked at this dashboard, that dashboard. Obviously, it's not this.
Per my last email.
Exactly. Per my last email, I won't throw Karen under the bus, but, you know, as you can see, I will attach a screenshot so quick. I will BCC my manager, be like, hey, look, fam, I done already told this person this, this, and this. But that's really what anybody could learn systems. And then I would think if we're going to really speak technical, I'd say it's good to have maybe some kind of scripting. So if you know Python, you were ahead of the game. I would say Linux skills are really, really big in systems because Linux runs on like 90% of internet servers. So if you learn Linux, you could write your own meal ticket. Like, I think Linux are good. If you have the fundamentals of like shell scripting, like basic commands like cd, grep, how to search for things, you're good. I mean, you could get in the door with like Linux skills because Linux skills are like a dime a dozen.
Nice. And well, it's funny, I had a Udemy course for some Linux stuff because every so often okay. I brush on it because I'm weak in it only because I didn't have to use it every day. But I knew I needed to learn it better because I was having issues installing something on Ubuntu, or I had to update some rules for it's rules for this tool called Suricata, and it was killing me. I had to hit up Dayspring like, hey man, I'm putting this thing down. It's not working. Oh, you need to use, it was either the cat command or some crap I need to use to do something, and I couldn't figure it out. So you're definitely right, because Linux is always useful, especially with everything going to the cloud. Linux is definitely helpful. Just knowing Linux and then learn how to automate things as well will definitely help you out. Do you know of any resources people could use to, besides YouTube, anything free or inexpensive they could use to show them Linux, some Bash, PowerShell?
Yes, there is. Dang it. I don't know the exact website. I could send it to you. I could email it to you, I guess, to if you wanted to post it in the description.
Okay.
But there is quite a few websites that I use to kind of crash course learn quick commands to run. And I would literally have it in one tab and I'd be in like logged on to the server through PuTTY and I'd be running those commands, checking on stuff. So there is
quite a few. You just said a magic word. You want to tell them what PuTTY is?
Yes. PuTTY is basically it's like an application or terminal that you can use to log in and execute shell scripts like Bash, Corn. So that's one of the tools, one of the many tools that you can use in Linux. There's Emacs. There's a bunch. So yes, I do. There is some resources that you can that are absolutely free that are like cheat sheets of commands that I can share.
That's nice. I'm glad you helped the people out with that. Because this podcast, No One's Sole Purpose, is to show that there's more than one way to skin a cat. There's so many different roles out here that people don't know about. I actually plan to try to get, I forgot what her YouTube name is. Is it Women in Linux or something? I can't remember, but I've been seeing her on different live streams and panels. And I hope to get her on here one day because she's been doing Linux for like 15 years. So, and then shout out to my guy, Keep It Techie. He's his channel's pretty much Linux and all about open source software. Yeah, he talks about that all the time.
Ooh.
So,
I see her. Yeah. Women in Linux. I see her channel.
Yeah. Yes. I'll be just listening to her talk. She's pretty dope just from what she said. So I might just have to, till I got time today and reach pull up out. on the page.
Yes, reach out, slide in her DMs.
But, you know, we talked a lot about, you know, kind of like your career. And, well, this will be the last kind of career question because I technically already asked you this far as being at the same job for almost 10 years. Well, same company. What's next in the sense of, I remember you said your interest changed. So what you got your sights set on as far as, you know, next in, you know, the career?
Something that's been kind of like eating at me for a while for like the past couple of years is I'm an extremely creative person, which is why I started the whole Glam Techie and my Instagram and stuff like that. Now it's evolved into a business that I'm building out. But I'm an extremely creative person and I'm looking at maybe going into front end. I haven't really done front end since college, but I remember some of the fundamentals. So I'm looking at maybe like something where I could be like a full stack designer or a front end designer. And I've been looking at different job roles and what that looks like at different companies. So that's something, that's a domain that I would definitely like to refresh myself on and definitely look into maybe transitioning in, because I do miss that creative aspect, because in systems, it's not sexy. Scripts are not sexy. Databases, you know, that may not excite some people, but that's the space that I'm definitely looking into possibly transitioning into.
Got you. Yeah, we got to get you back in the camera.
Oh, am I too far?
Yeah, you was like on the edge.
Oh, okay, okay. That's sorry.
There you go. Well, actually, when you were sitting straight, you was in there.
Okay.
Because it's like now? Your chair. It's like your chair's turned. Whatever way you used to, you were sitting there first.
Okay. How about now?
Okay. Yeah, we good. All right. Okay. So what we do with the next couple of questions is like, you know, first of all, what made you? Well, I don't think you're the only glam techie. I think you're the only glam techie that has your name spelled the way it's spelled. But yes. I do see different glam techies, and sometimes I get confused. Yes. Like, which one is this?
One of them, the glam techie, is a tech writer, because we homies, we talk on the DMs all the time. She's an actual freelance technical writer. Yeah. She's doing a lot.
And
of
I think she's reached out to me before too. I think I can't.
Okay.
Remember.
Okay.
But what spurred that? How long is not how long glam techie's been in the works, but as far as you know, the glam techie with the IG and whatever stuff, like how long has that been going on?
Oh man, it's been going on for over a year. I would say almost 2 years. So the whole idea was I started really glam techies to catch your attention, right? Mm-hmm. It's to represent that not everybody fits the mold of tech. Not everybody, like, you know, I love my J's. I love my Air Force Ones. I love my jeans. Not everybody fits the mold of what people say tech people should look like.
You right. know,
there's a lot of people of color. There's a lot of minorities in this space. There's a lot of minorities trying to get into this space. So glam techie, I'm trying to represent and show people that you don't got to fit the mold to work in tech. You don't have to fit the mold to get the good paying job that you desire, that is totally doable. So that's what that kind of represents. And so my page or whatever has evolved, because when I first started my IG page 2 years ago, I thought I was just going to do cute little affirmations like, you can do it. Oh, you got this. Oh, yes, boo. And then I realized there was other pages that did that better than me. So I was like, okay, I'm going to have to add a little bit more meat and context. Let me just share my personal story and my struggles to help reach other people, let them know like other Black people, other Black men and women can get into this space. So that's kind of how that came about.
Yeah, it's crazy. So, I mean, that's around the same time frame. I think I've been like a year and a half. I was kind of already doing what I do now. Like on the low, it just wasn't publicized. And I decided the second half of 2020 that I probably just going to go all in and see where it got me. And it's been an interesting. For me, it's tough only because, well, we can say both, but we're the only person doing everything for us. So from making edits on this to shooting content ideas, to posting,
IG,
email marketing,
tell the people,
Twitter, engagement on like my YouTube community tab, building up other things, Facebook, trying to get people to go and buy me a coffee and putting stuff on it. Like, well, I still have it. I have like my Instagram is connected to like a Facebook business page, but I don't really utilize it like I should for the most part. It's because it's a lot. That's why I have an app called Buffer where I can just post. LinkedIn is really like my friend now. So I do a lot of more business on LinkedIn now. I've been marketing more on there because it's a professional site and people are actually trying to do the right thing on there. I mean, yes, I did raise my following on Twitter. It could be more, but I don't have Twitter on my regular phone anymore right now. It's because time consuming. I find myself in senseless debates with people. Yeah, well, I mean, it was fun to me, but at the same time, it's like it's a waste of time. I could I'm much better when I could tweet without the influence of what's on the timeline. Whatever comes to my head is what comes to my head. I didn't read anything and made me tweet it, far as Twitter's concerned.
Yeah, I feel the same. I feel like you could be yourself on Twitter more than you can on Instagram.
I'm both. I think now it comes with the texting part, like far as like posts, I think you're right. But I'm both. I'm also like, you know, if I do post stories or whatever, I miss the fleets on Twitter. But with that being said, you already talked about like your IG and selling your personal stories, circling back to when you said the 40 rejections. I know one of my videos that I made, like, not necessarily, I got to check, I don't even know how many views it has. The video I did with like 100, you know, jobs told me no. But the crazy thing about that is, if I'm not mistaken, I want to say that might be in the video where I seen DeJuan Lightfoot checked in on it. And I was like, oh, dang, I'm really doing something now. Like, people in the space that's been, you know, making YouTube content for a while, I was like, tuning in.
That's awesome.
So that's why one of the reasons why I'm not caught up in, you know, I mean, I got a good amount of subs now, a decent amount. And
yeah, you're doing good. I've been seeing you and Black Female Engineer. I've been following y'all for a while.
Who's Black Female Engineer?
What's her name? Naya? The Black Female Engineer. She's on IG.
Oh, you have to send me her page.
I think she's got almost... Here, let me pull up her IG real quick. I think you might follow her, Henry.
I don't know. It's actually Unri.
Is that how? Oh, did I say it wrong?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
That's the reason why I just keep it at HD for a reason, because it's just easier for people to just say HD. But I always say, if you mess my name up, you're trying to get it right.
Sorry. But yeah, you follow her, right?
I don't know. You just have to share her page with me. And
okay, I'll share
Instagram. But yeah, so we'll actually talk a little bit about YouTube really quick. We'll actually turn this into a learning lesson for the techs that's out there, because it's a lot of people that want to start. I have people, shout out to my guy Randall, 50, Talking Tech with 50. Our episode is actually, even though guys watching this is pre-recorded, so it don't matter, but his episode is dropping this week. And he was asking me about YouTube as well. And I really can say the biggest thing is, you know, like I tell everybody, I say, hey, go watch Nick Neiman, go watch Think Media, pay attention.
That's awesome.
Because if people notice, and it's funny because I've been had this lens for my camera, but I just put it on like at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. Me and Dayspring and I tried to go live and I tried to use it, but for whatever reason, it wasn't working right that day. But now, you know, it's fine. Like, my lighting's good. I changed my backdrop. Well, I just rearranged some stuff. Audio is a big one. Everybody's focused on video, but if people can't hear you, that's one of the big ones. So make sure your audio's good. Make sure the content is good, which it's not going to always be good. Like, I go back, I kind of cringe at, I'm going to do a reaction to my very first video.
Cringe at two of my videos already.
I shot it on the front facing camera of, I forgot, I think it might have been my old Pixel 3. But okay. The audio's not that good. It's all in my face. It's like, you know, but I could tell you, like, if you're worried, like, it's, you know, because I didn't start off with what I have. Like, now I actually got, you know, different equipment, and I'm looking to possibly get like a Sony ZV-1 just to vlog or whatever.
That's what I want. I was looking at an E10. I upgraded my phone to the 13. So my first 11 videos have been on an iPhone XR, and I just have a ring light. And then I got me a video micro from Rode, and I just put that on top of my little phone tripod on my ring light, so that'll collect any like filter out.
That's a cardioid mic.
Noise.
Yeah, I mean, I shot a lot on there too, the back one. And now, if you have an Apple Watch, you can set it up to where I've been seeing on Think
Media. I do have an Apple Watch. Actually,
you can
put me up on game, Henry. Put me up on game.
Dang, it's up there. But you can wrap the watch around this part right here, and so it'll be looking like a screen, so you can see how you look. So you can use the back camera to record. So they got that functionality now. In all actuality, you don't need to necessarily go get you a mirrorless camera if you don't want to. I have it because it makes it easier for me to record. I just leave it up, and then I can just sit down, and then I have like like two newer lights right here. I got a key light right here. Then I have a light thing. It's a whole bunch of different contractions that I got that's on top of connected to my camera that I use for light, just for the lens. And then these two lights behind me, and then my what you call it, light. But all the stuff came like later. I mean, I tried to do it like a little bit in 2020. Ooh, she's upset. But
Is that your daughter?
Yes, one of them. But all this stuff came like later. I mean, because I could tell, I remember like I used to, like, one of the things that can help you out with your videos is you script them out. I probably can go into Google Keep or my notes and show like why I script the videos.
I've heard about that.
Yeah, because what happens is if you script it out, then you can read your script and see, do you think it's going to even be beneficial? Therefore, you may or may not even have to waste time shooting it. And I was utilizing TubeBuddy, but I really wasn't using the Keyword Explorer. Now, if something comes to my mind, I kind of do the Keyword Explorer. If it looks good, I'll say, okay, cool, I'll do something on it. But that's how I do my thumbnails and my titles now. Like, I'll throw it in. If I do a reaction, I'll throw up something. I'll say, boom, okay, I got it. And I'll see that it get a little bit of traction. And I forgot when it was when I fell off. I know for one, I fell off with doing this. For a while, it's like, hey, I got super busy, but I was like, I knew how I fell off because I didn't have it scheduled. Now that's the reason I send the links out. I have them booked up. So it makes me go and say, okay, boom, I know I got this in 2 weeks, or I got an episode every day. I need to shoot this thing and not fall off for like a couple of weeks. And because what I used to do was just like manually say, oh, you want to be on there? Okay, cool. I'll create everything. Boom, boom. I say, but I already pay for Calendly. Let me just send the link out and it'll already tell them what to do. It's going to automate everything for me and I'm good. And now I've also been using, I didn't figure it out. This ain't my YouTube relate, but even for my business, whenever somebody buy my ebook, Zapier post to my Twitter, like, hey, somebody just bought the ebook. And all the other stuff, it's just been a whole journey of, but like I said, I was talking about how a live streamer could be beneficial. I'm having a live stream a lot just because of little kids. And sometimes I can either live stream late at night or a time like this, maybe when they're doing something. It really just depends. But live streaming, premiering your videos works pretty good as well because you still can go in the chat and talk to people. You can pin stuff in the chat. Thumbnails,
that's
SEO.
What I'm trying to...
Oh, it's another girl, actually. Any dude. No, you go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. No, you first. Oh,
okay, I was just saying Annie. Her name is Annie Dube. I learned a lot from her in 2020. Like, she started like her YouTube, like I want to say 2020. Like, she blew up. She probably still does give YouTube tips. I don't know. I haven't checked her content out in a while.
But, Duke as in D-U-K-E?
I think it's Dube, like D-U... Delta Uniform Bravo. I think that's what it is.
Okay.
Did it come up?
I found her.
Okay. Yeah, she's, I think she's a camera or something, but like, I don't even know how many subscribers she got now. How many she got?
129.
Okay, that's crazy. I remember when she started off, like, she went into like 50K then, like, but her videos were blowing up. So, but, thumbnails, SEO. So it's a rule of thumb. You need to have your title back in the description and like one or two sentences or whatever you're talking about, so it can become more searchable. That ranks higher than using all the tags. Trust me, I used to use all the tags. It doesn't really.
See, I'm doing that too. So you're saying SEO. So you're saying like take a description of whatever I'm talking about and make that the title of the video.
So let's say, for instance, we said in this video, I said, I labeled it, you know, what are the skills you need to become, you know, how to become a system engineer, whatever. And I said, oh, in this video, we're going to talk about how to be a system engineer and, you know, what types of, you know, how much a system engineer pays, which I didn't ask because I forgot. But it's stuff like that because system engineer is constantly repeating itself. And so it's going to rank higher in the search when somebody types in system engineer. So that's pretty much the thought process of that. Automating your descriptions. Call to action. Hey, instead of saying, what up, YouTube? Go ahead and subscribe to the video. Like, comment, subscribe. I have to, like, even sometimes now I'll be in a video then say, hey, you know, if you're interested in cybersecurity news, career help, and blah, 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 you know, please hit the subscribe button, you know, call to action right there. It's just different ways you can do it, different ways you can skin the cat. But the main thing is just staying consistent. You know, even if you got to spend and plan them out and you only shoot two videos, cool, bam, boom, you did your two videos. And that's how you work on it. One of the easier things that I can do now is when I don't have a lot of time is with these, they're so long that I could do two or three snippets from a podcast episode and then throw it up on YouTube while I'm still working on some other content that I need to shoot. So,
That's good.
Reactions, podcast videos. I got other technical videos that I plan to do. I never fails.
Oh, and there's and then there's this I think he follows both of us. He used to be Devin Coffee on IG, but he's Christian. You know what I'm talking about?
Devin Coffee.
Okay, maybe not. Okay, but there's another brother that's in tech and his page is called Black Heights. Have you heard of him?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. So actually, ironically, I've actually, he just talked to Kev Tech the other day and I told him I want to come on. So I may be on Black Heights eventually whenever he gets to my email.
Okay.
But yeah, so.
Okay. He's pretty dope.
Yeah, I actually seen him on a channel that I don't really care for anymore. I don't know if that'll come up when me and him talk. He's been dope. And if you've been noticing, he's been doing a lot of live streams. Shout out to Before the Billions. I don't know if you've seen Before the Billions, but I think he's been on Black Heights before too. But we got something in the works that's coming up. He's a fellow YouTuber in Atlanta. I think he's a data engineer. I think that's what he does.
Okay. Yeah, he's one of the few YouTubers that actually talk about information tech, like technology and stuff like that, and then like the differences. So he does that space, but that's cool. And then I guess my last question for you, because I don't want to keep you, and I appreciate the opportunity for you putting me on, giving me an opportunity to be on your channel and to chat with you, which is super exciting and super dope, is when did you start seeing traction on your channel? Because I know a lot of people say definitely you have to be consistent in your uploads with that. So I'm working on content planning like that. But when did you start to see stuff really kind of take a turn?
I don't know. I think it was just different. I think it was crazy because I started this channel in late July or August of 2020. I can't remember. I have to look. But I got all my TubeBuddy stuff from back then. At the end of 2020, I only had, 500 subs? 500 some subs, if not close to 1,000. Okay. I can't remember. You have to, like, if you want to fact check me, go back to one of the streams I did either in the beginning of 2021 with Dayspring, and you'll hear me talk about like how many subs I got. No, not fact check me, but I really can't remember. I started realizing once
I'm
hit
not
the
Tasha K. You.
Oh man, ain't nobody worry about Tasha K. She played herself.
she did. Bless her heart.
The winos. Anyways, I think when I finally hit the 1,000 mark, I started noticing that I was really getting traction because of my videos. Like, people starting to subscribe. I still market pretty heavy now. Like, I use this app called SocialBee as well. SocialBee automates.
I've heard of them. Yes. Okay.
It automates like some of my podcast episodes, stuff from my playlist, and other stuff. I can just make a campaign, and I can make it just post whenever. Like I said, with Buffer, I do the same thing. And I used to just do, when I first started off, I would do like some good sentences about what my video is about and boom, send it to Twitter. Boom. Join some Reddits that had like YouTube help. Say, oh, you can post your YouTube videos. We don't care. Like, I post them there. So I was doing all the early grinding stuff, which I still continue to be doing, but I just don't necessarily have the bandwidth to do it anymore because I'll be busy. Mm-hmm. LinkedIn helped me a lot too because my content I talk about is what people are trying to do. So if you have a LinkedIn and you want to post on LinkedIn and you kind of do like a little bit like, hey, blah, 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 this is me. This is what I learned about this. And, you know, those long drawn out posts on LinkedIn with videos always do good numbers for the most part for me. I've had recruiters and all different type of people like reach out to me on LinkedIn and say, yeah, I like your, you know, channel and stuff like that. commenting, doing good comments on people's videos helps too. Like, and then your video starts getting, I mean, your comments start getting liked and people click on your profile and they start replying, whether it's a good comment or you're trolling or whatever. Like that helps too.
Going to live chat. See, I feel kind of weird about doing that too, because I don't want to feel like I'm trying to, you know what I'm saying?
Well, I just, like, I ain't gonna lie. Well, I offended some people in the beginning. Cause I was like, I was on some like 50 Cent type stuff. Like I just was taking my video, copy and pasting and say, hey, yeah, you should check out my video. But honestly, that's the wrong way to go. Right way to go is to just comment about what their video is about. So I'm actually thoughtful. And then if most of the time that owner do, if you in the same thing as them, they normally reply back and then say, hey man, can you check out my video or something? Or you never know, they might share it to their community tab. Like I know. A couple of times I done laugh at since you brought up Tasha K, I'm pretty sure you're familiar with O'Shea Duke Jackson.
Oh my god, yes.
He laughed at one of my, so funny thing is he laughed at one of my comments because I was like, he posted somebody's prom picture. I was like, yeah, you looking real dusty. And he liked that. But then shout out to Struggle Security. He's friends with dude Gabe. I do not pronounce Gabe's name. Aberrote. I ain't gonna mess up Gabe name like that. But he got a YouTube channel now called Struggle Security. And he's friends with O'Shea, okay. And we'll probably be doing some eventually too. But it's stuff like that, like coming in on that, like I'll be coming in on mediocre and tutorial reviews and people like the comments and stuff. So it really just, you know, it's all about, it's a similar, it's almost like when you on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter and you get like, I know a lot of my stuff started hidden. Like that's what happened with me on Twitter. It's just like I had some tweets that was really hidden and people started following me. So. But nice. That's like short good version. Tips. If I could actually like do good it more tips. Concisely. And just like I said, it's like Dayspring, like make quality content that people are probably looking for. Like everything he does is pretty much on the channel and he's been killing it. He's probably going to be at 10,000 subs by the end of the month.
Wow.
But yeah, I think
like Cyberwolf, right?
Yeah. But if you also pay attention with him, like, and me and him, like, so you also look at our beginnings to kind of like, our videos and stuff now, like quality's increasing, audio and all this other stuff. It kind of goes along with, okay, this dude probably knows what they're talking about. Oh, I like it. Or, you know, also I use Epidemic Sound on some of my videos, like trying to find some good music, some good
my intro,
some lo-fi music that I keep to like negative 20 something decibels or something that I put on the video, kind of just to help people tune in. Eventually I'm gonna get to where I switch the music based on what I'm doing in the video.
That's dope.
So that helps too. Eventually, I'll get into like when I do my video zooming in and all the angles. I'll just so you see what Nick Neiman do where he's talking and then it go closer and all that.
Yeah, and it changes. Helps.
That helps. That really helps.
I don't know if I'm going to be at that level yet.
And I think the last one I'll say is like make longer videos. Longer videos. YouTube like longer videos and that's longer they watch, longer watch time. So that helps too. If you try to make 5-minute videos, then somebody might only watch it 1 minute and 30 seconds. Then you make a 20-minute video. Maybe that person only watched 3 minutes and whatever seconds, but that's longer than the 1 minute, 30 seconds. So you got to look at it like that.
Okay. That's good advice. I appreciate it.
But yeah, that's, let me see what we got. I'm going to go to this real quick. But yeah, that's pretty much what we're going to do. We're going to just wrap up this episode. Like that, you know, we talked about her being a system engineer. We talked about her business, Glam Techie is her brand. And also, you know, we gave y'all some YouTube tips for those of y'all that have been looking into getting into YouTube and starting a YouTube channel. If you like the advice you already know, make sure you subscribe to the channel. Make sure you share it out to other people that want to start their own YouTube channel, whether they're in tech or not. And as for Miss Glam Techie, can you tell people where they can follow you at on social media?
Yep, all my handles, Glam Techie at Instagram, Glam Techie at Twitter, and Tech with Glam Techie on YouTube. So it's pretty much the same name.
Y'all got a social. Y'all go ahead and y'all make sure y'all follow her for those of y'all that are listening. And all those links will be in the description. I appreciate everybody for rocking with me. And hey, 2022, y'all know what to do. Let's get textual. And we out.